You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is the American Hour. I am Commander Tom Garcia. You're listening to the USA Talk Radio Network. Thank you for joining us today. And, of course, my lovely co-host, Paula Lozon Osman, is with us also, as always. Paula, how are you today?
Doing great, Tom. How are you?
Excellent. Boy, we got a lot of stuff to cover today, and we're going to get right into it. Some administrative stuff first off. Everybody knows that we're broadcasting Monday and Wednesday now instead of Monday through Friday, but we've got some great folks that are actually going to be filling in for us, Paula, and I just dropped that on you just a few minutes ago, but that's okay. People need to go to the website, usaradionetwork.com, go to our page, the American Hour page, and you'll see some great information. But if you go back to the homepage, the USA Talk Radio Network page, you're going to see, and I'm just going to pull it up here real quickly, but Michael Cutler, he has agreed, we've been trying to get him to actually start broadcasting. He's actually now going to start broadcasting on Fridays at 7 p.m. I believe this Friday will be his first day. We'll make sure we put that out there on Facebook and Twitter and on the web page. But he is a 30-year INS officer who is fantastic guest as well as a host. He filled in for me with your help, Paula, about a week ago. Wasn't that it? About a week ago on one of the days as a guest host. And he's frequently, I mean, almost every day I get emails from him saying he's going to be on this radio show or that TV show. He was on Michael Savage's show last week, and they liked him so much they asked him to come back again this week. I don't know particularly which day, but he's going to be back on the Michael Savage show this week. And that has inspired him to finally go, okay, I got to do it. So he's going to be broadcasting Friday, 7 p.m. Just go to usaradionetwork.com. And then, of course, Bella D'Angelo, she's been broadcasting 7 days a week. Good for her, but she's going to scale back a little for the summer also. But go to her page, and you can get direct access to her broadcasting, little plug in there. And she's broadcasting during the days, I believe, around noon. Maybe it's 11 to 1 or noon to 2, something like that. But Ed Ross on Sundays at 3 p.m. And, of course, Susan Bradford. We had her on the show a couple months ago, and she's an author of that book called Lynched. Man, what a fascinating insight into the corruption inside the Beltway, as well as corruption at the state and local government levels. But she's going to start broadcasting this summer for us, and I don't know yet if it's going to be on Tuesday or Wednesday, but hopefully I'll get an answer from her this week. But she said she's ready to go. And, of course, our good friends Steve Rosenblum and Daria DiGiovanni, and they're broadcasting Monday through Friday at 2 Eastern, and then Saturday at 6, and that's when they get their great guests on. Generally, on Saturday at 6 p.m., great stuff. So check all of that out for us, please. But now for us, I put on the website today, I updated it, not only with our guests today, Sid Prescott and Dick Birnbeck, which are going to talk to us about Agenda 21 and what the UN has in store for America. But also, I came across this awesome little spreadsheet that lists the difference between January 2009 and today in terms of numbers, anything from the cost of sugar, unemployment, number of unemployed, number of federal employees, all the way down to the national debt. It's Obama by the numbers, his first 2 years. You've got to check it out. There's a link to the page that I set up off-site so that you can view that, copy it, print it out, do whatever you want. And then finally, you sent this to me today, Paula, about the Keystone Pipeline. Now, we were the ones that broke the news on this, about a month ago. There were webinars that you could go to and find out how to get involved and push for this. It's finally hitting Fox News and some of the other news stations, but it's the Canadian pipeline that will bring significant amount of oil into the U.S. We already buy most of our oil, foreign oil, from Canada to begin with. I would much rather give my hard-earned dollars for gasoline to Canada than to Venezuela or Iran or Saudi Arabia. And we could reduce our foreign Middle Eastern and Venezuelan oil by about 40% with this pipeline. Except, guess what? President Obama thinks it's bad, bad for the country. No, 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 we don't want to do that. So apparently he likes buying oil from foreign dictators and countries that hate us and would like to see us destroyed. That's just moronic, absolutely moronic, but that's what he wants to do. So I put a link on the website here. It says, send the president a message about the Keystone Pipeline. And that takes you directly to a organization that's been working with this and has been getting some more news play. Of course, we were talking about it back, I'm going to scroll down. Let's see when we had Nick Gutierrez on the show. Let's see, that was 12 May. You can go listen to the show. He's chairman of the Florida Energy Forum, and we talked all about the Keystone Pipeline and some other things. So you can go replay that by going to our website, clicking on any of the archived interviews, and it will take you to the Blog Talk site that allows you to listen to or stream or download any of our past shows. So important stuff there. And, of course, finally, Joan Flowers, read that important message on the website about her trying to get her World War II hero father buried in Arlington. And, see if you can do something to help us out with that. Okay, that takes care of all that stuff. We've got two great guests on the show today. Let's get right into it. But oh, wait a minute. I got one last thing to do here. I'm going to play something. And this is a stroll down memory lane, Paula. Little stroll down memory lane. Let's play something from our president talking back in, let's see, when was this? This would have been on the February 23rd, 2009. So right after he took the presidency, took charge and was in charge of the White House. Let's see what he had to say about cutting the deficit.
And that's why today I'm pledging to cut the deficit we inherited by half by the end of my first term in office.
Wow. Now, there's Mr. It's not my fault. It's not my fault. It's always somebody else's fault. He had to say the deficit that we inherited. He had to say that. I'm telling you, as a guy who spent 22 years in the Navy, a retired Navy commander, that is the worst, the absolute worst leadership for anybody in the world, is to stand up there and start yapping about how your predecessor screwed you. That is the stupidest, the worst kind of leadership I've ever seen in my life, and I know that every military officer out there would agree with me. You don't say that. You just stand up there and say, we're going to cut the prevailing deficit by half by the end of my term. Except, guess what? He's not going to. He's lied to us. He lied, and he just lies daily to us about this stuff. And it's really, you can tell, getting under my skin. But a little stroll down memory lane, the liar-in-chief telling us that he's going to cut the annual deficit. And, Paula, remember, the annual deficit is just the rate at which we're going into debt. He's never once mentioned the national debt. No, he doesn't have a problem with that running up. And interestingly enough, in the remainder of his speech there, he said, I refuse to leave our children with a debt they cannot repay. Interesting. Well, that link that I gave you for the spreadsheet that talks about debt, let's see, when he took office, the national debt was $10.6 trillion. Today, it's almost 4.6, especially if we raise the debt ceiling. Right now, it's 14.3. So he has just about added $4 trillion to the debt since he took office in just 2 years. Now, there's a little analogy on the spreadsheet. And I think it's quite interesting, and it does highlight what this guy has done to us. He tells us he's going to cut the debt in half, and yet here's what he actually does. Imagine that you're driving down the highway at 65 miles per hour. 65 miles per hour. And the president, who's raising the debt at an astronomical rate, was going to represent how fast he's going at raising the debt compared to any other president in the history of our nation. The rate at which he's raising it compared to any other president in the history of our nation. You're going 65. He would have to go by you at 7,555 miles per hour. That's how fast he's screaming to raise the debt compared to any other president in the history of our nation. So when he says things like, don't worry, Israel, we got your back. Go back to 1949 borders, or, when he makes statements like that, he never keeps his promises, not a single one of them. And when he does keep any kind of a promise or even attempts to come close to it, it's meaningless. It's some drivel little promise that he made that doesn't make a difference to our nation, especially when it comes to the economy and creating jobs, which is what the vast majority of Americans care about. So I thought it would be interesting to play that little cut there, Paula, just to stroll down memory lane and see what folks think about that. In any case, let's bring our two distinguished guests on right now. Got Sid Prescott and Dick Bierenbach joining us. How are you gentlemen doing today?
Doing good, Tom. Good to be on your show.
Well, thank you so much. Let's just jump right into it with you, Sid. Our listeners know Dick pretty well, and he's guest hosted for us. He's guest co-hosted and been on the show many times. Our good friend Dick Bierenbach, thanks for joining us and setting this up, because you did arrange this for us, Dick, and you did suggest that Sid come on. But Sid, tell us a little bit about your background, why you're involved in trying to stop Agenda 21, and how people can connect with you and any organizations that are working to stop Agenda 21.
Well, thanks for having me on, Tom. It's quite an honor. I'm very pleased to be here, and hopefully we get a little bit of information out to people today. I retired out of the commercial diving business back in the early 1990s, so after 20-some-odd years of working in that industry worldwide. Subsequently got into the commercial fishing business and was basically forced out of that business through the overzealous regulation of the fishing industry by government is going on today, and as illustrated by the complete closure on the South Atlantic region here of the red snapper fishery, which is a species of fish that is extremely abundant. But back in the early 90s, don't ask me to explain how I got into it, but I came across the information that led me to research Agenda 21, and that's been a project of mine that's been ongoing to this very day. And I spent countless hours and read thousands of pages of documents on it. And it's amazing to me that after all of these years, there are so few people that have even heard of it, much less know anything about it, including our government officials, which are more in the dark than the average. Our fishing regulations, most people, Agenda 21, came to light in 1992 in Rio de Janeiro at a United Nations conference that became known as the Earth Summit. You had Agenda 21, which is a 40-chapter policy document, and it's a companion document to a United Nations treaty, the Convention on Biological Diversity. Now, the important thing to understand that in 92, when this United Nations treaty was forwarded to the United States Senate for ratification, it was on the fast track to be approved. The United Nations had not even given our United States Senate the complete document saying that it hadn't been written yet, just go ahead and ratify it. And they were very willing to do so until Dr. Michael Kaufman from Bangor, Maine, actually set up a meeting with George Mitchell, who was the majority leader at that time, and showed him pictures of maps of what's called the Wildlands Project that would be implemented through the ratification of that treaty. The Wildlands Project calls for 50% of the land in the United States to be placed in core wilderness areas with little to no human use. These maps were shown on the floor of the United States Senate in 1993, and it stopped the ratification process in its tracks. It's not been voted on to this day. Nevertheless, it is being and has been almost completely fully implemented through executive orders of President Clinton and President Bush. The 21 was signed in Rio by President Bush before it was attempted to be ratified by the United States Senate. When the vote was canceled in 1993, President Clinton convened, by executive order, the President's Council on Sustainable Development. There were many of his cabinet-level officials and other governmental officials, members of high-profile NGOs, environmental groups, so on and so forth, that were members of this council, and their task was to find ways to implement the provisions of Agenda 21 and the Convention on Biological Diversity administratively through existing statutes and regulations. And that's how it has come to be in virtually every town, every city, every government agency from federal to state to county in the United States today.
Yeah, well, you know, they use this term sustainable development. And they always use terms that sound good. How would you describe what sustainable development really is, Sid?
Well, sustainable development, if you want to boil it down to its simplest term, is complete control over every human activity, and it is written by not sharing our beliefs in the free market capitalist system, and especially in respect to private property rights. As a matter of fact, the United Nations adopted a position on private property in 1976 at the United Nations Conference on Human Settlements. This was actually signed by Carla Hills, the Secretary of HUD, and William Riley, the head administrator for the EPA. And Tom, just let me read to you a brief paragraph that is the United Nations position on private property. And it says, quote, "Land cannot be treated as an ordinary asset controlled by individuals and subject to the pressures and inefficiencies of the market. Private land ownership is also a principal instrument of accumulation of and concentration of wealth and therefore contributes to social injustice." Now, that was signed by two cabinet-level officials of the United States government. It has become the official policy of the United States government. And we're dealing with the consequences of it through overzealous land use regulations today, all the way down to the local level. Another way that they have infiltrated locally, and Agenda 21 actually calls for local governments to implement local Agenda 21s. And that's been done through the, I'm going to use the word infiltration, which is absolutely what it is, of an organization.
Hey, I'm sorry, Sid. I don't know if it's just me or if you're cutting out on everybody else. Are you hearing him the whole time, Dick?
No, he cut out on me too.
Yeah, I don't know if he's. Did you call him?
How's this?
Yeah, okay. Your last few sentences there were cut out, so try that again.
Okay. What I was stating was that the way that they have come in behind the scenes and implementing these policies that have not been approved by our Congress is at the local level, and I'll give you an example. In Volusia County, Florida, the county government is one of over 600 local governments across the United States that have become members of ICLEI, the International Council for Local and Environmental Initiatives. This organization, if you go to their website, iclei.org, you will see their goals there, which is implementation of Agenda 21 and the Kyoto Protocols and the never ratified Convention on Biological Diversity at the local level. And that's been in process and is being done as we speak right now in Volusia County, Florida, and over 40 other local governments throughout Florida and over 600 in the United States. So this is how they have circumvented our constitutional processes, where the United States Senate, as per Article 1, Section 10, approves treaties by two-thirds vote of the Senate. When that was not done in 1993, they have used through presidential executive orders and this ICLEI organization coming in through the back door at the local level to get these foreign policy initiatives implemented locally.
Sid, can I ask a question?
Certainly, Dick.
ICLEI is part of the UN, and if I remember right, the Constitution says that local governments, being the state, city, and county, cannot be involved in any UN activities. Only the federal government can.
Well, that's exactly right, Dick, and it's Article 1, Section 10, that states that no state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation with a foreign organization or government. The county and local city governments are political subdivisions of the state, so they are bound by the same prohibition as the state government is. And as you know, I drafted a letter to Governor Rick Scott back on February the 5th about him, where I requested that he request a review of this by Attorney General Pam Bondi. And as of this date, we have not received a reply from Governor Scott to this.
Well, can I just jump in here real quick, Sid? We got a caller that wants to talk to you about a Martin 912 group. And before I bring her on, her name's Cindy, I just wanted to say, I made an error earlier in the show, and as a pilot, I should know better than to just read something without thinking about it. But my analogy of the president spending at a higher rate than anybody else. 27 times 65 is not 7,500 miles per hour, but it's more like 1,755 miles per hour. So anybody out there going, what's this guy? Yeah, as a pilot, I ought to know better. Now, I have been that fast in an F-16 up at high altitude, and that was the ground speed. You know, the higher you go, you can go faster. But anyway, so, but 7,500 miles per hour, I think you got to be in outer space on a rocket ship to go that fast. And that may not
I hope he's wearing a G-suit.
Yeah. So in any case, and somebody in the chat room said, isn't that about the speed of light? So he's not quite going that fast. So I just want to, you know, retract that. But at the same time, you know, the idea behind the sustainable development really kind of is to create a sense of guilt about using natural resources. And that's kind of my take on it. And so I just want everybody to know, I just went and turned all the lights on in my house and all the ceiling fans because I have no guilt whatsoever about using natural resources because there are plenty of them. But the other thing I wanted to say was the President Bill Clinton created a President's Council on Sustainable Development through executive order. I would like anybody on the planet to please call in, write in, come in the chat room, and explain to me where in the Constitution the president has authority to write executive orders. Now, we've been through this before, but I'm going to go through it very quickly because this is what these presidents do. They've all been doing it, but we've got a president who's doing it to an extreme now. And this is not by executive order. This is by fiat, okay? If it were meant to be in the Constitution, if you were meant to write executive orders, then it would be in the Constitution because the 10th Amendment tells us if it doesn't say it, you can't do it. Now, people would argue he's the executive. He's got to be able to control the executive branch. This doesn't just control the executive branch and tell departments within the executive branch what they can do. It's telling them what they can do to us. Now, I'm going to read from Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution. We have an enumeration of power for the president that he can essentially ask a question. And I'm going to read it to you. He may require the opinion in writing of the principal officer of each of the executive departments upon any subject relating to the duties of their respective offices. So in other words, he can ask a question of the executive department leaders in the executive branch. Well, why would we have to enumerate that power, but we don't have to enumerate the fact that he can write these executive orders bypassing legislation, precisely for that reason, because all of the branches in the executive branch are funded, appropriated, and directed by the legislature. If he starts issuing orders, he's bypassed the Congress, and it results in taxation without representation, ends up with no representation whatsoever. So I just wanted to point that out, that these executive orders are a violation of the Constitution, a violation of our representation in the legislature, and so the reality is that they should be null and void, and the Congress should be taking care of that. But I want to throw that out there and just also let everybody know that all the ceiling fans in my house are going. But I'll go back to you, Sid.
Well, I just turned on a few ceiling fans and I got the oven on full blast myself, too.
Oh, before I forget, we've got Cindy on the line, and she wants to bring something up about vetting candidates and Agenda 21 and some other things. So let's bring Cindy on here. Go ahead, Cindy. Oops.
Hey, you know Sid. You sent me an email, Sid. I'm lucky, Sid.
Yes.
Okay, good. I've known about this for a long time, but unfortunately I was drinking the Kool-Aid and not really taking it that seriously back in 2000. So, but I am now. And let me tell you what's been going on. We have just put together a Republican platform for our county here in Martin County, which is one county north of Palm Beach. And we got done with the planks. Hopefully this will be ratified on probably Wednesday, we hope. We'll have a little opposition. But we got the language in there, and we basically mirrored the Texas, Oklahoma, the new Iowa platform from 2011, where it rejects UN Agenda 21. Now, the next step will be whether or not we can get the candidates to sign onto the platform, meaning are they going to sign each plank individually or nothing at all? That's the next hurdle. But this is spreading throughout the state through our state committee man, and we're pushing for other counties to do it. The second thing is we started vetting candidates in 2010 and exposed the progressives on a local level who were for these initiatives, one being a Mr. Fielding, because we live in a county where Jupiter Island is, and this is 1,000 friends from Florida. Our comprehensive plan was written by Maggie Horchella, who is Janet Reno's sister. So we are being run by these so-called people. Even though we are not a member of ICLEI, we propose the same policies and initiatives come through our county here. So the vetting process really is fantastic, and we're starting up again. And every candidate's come to talk is hounded about this. Mike McAllister, you know, we've had him a couple times, and we love Mike. He gets it. Governor Scott, I've had two conversations with him. We gave him a bunch of stuff. He also met with Ocala because Ocala and I speak. Colorado, Mary Clark, who moved from Ocala, she's constantly on the phone with the Tea Party Patriots along with me on Monday night trying to get them to recognize Agenda 21. Well, they finally came to light, and now they had Tom DeWeese on the phone call. But in the meantime, this is what came about 2 weeks ago, and I want you to know about this and tell me what you think. We were told on the call that the language, UN Agenda 21, really, it's too conspiratorial. And it was quite an interesting conversation with this national call, because what do you mean it's too conspiratorial? All you have to do is do the exercise by going to Amazon and put in UN Agenda 21, and all of the books come up. But the politicians and everything that's been going on in Washington, they really don't want you to say these words. They would rather you say central government, all of this other stuff. And I truly believe it's because they want some of it, and we know they do. And if people got to know what it really is, they would vote against this.
Cindy, I'm sitting here right before me. I have a document that is published, produced, and written under the auspices of the United Nations, and the title of it is Agenda 21. It is a 40-chapter document, as you know, and it has become the official policy of the United States government.
But they don't want to say it, Sid. How do we get them to say it?
Then they need to get some backbone. That's our problem today. You know, the politicians, it seemingly, once they get up into D.C. in a public office, their backbone disappears. And this business, you see, this business of calling it a conspiracy theory, black helicopters and all that stuff, that serves only one purpose, and that is to silence people into not talking about this. But those days are over.
Well, Cindy, can I just give you one website to go to? That's www.platformyes.com. And the reason is you can go in there, and he's going to upload, we will have our platform on there, and I think they're going to try to get the Iowa platform on there too. But you can read some Oklahoma and Texas platforms. One of the reasons that we decided to go along with this and push our local Republican Party was, it also is a very, very good tool, like you just did for me, Sid, reading me a document. It's good to say, well, if this isn't real, if this is a conspiracy, why is it in the platform of Iowa?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Cindy, I give you one piece of advice here as a former congressional candidate, and that is vetting is great, but do it quickly, get it over with, and then get behind the candidates. Don't use the vetting process, which you're probably not going to, but I've seen, unfortunately, groups do this.
Mm-hmm.
Don't use the vetting process so that you now personally in your group know who to vote for. Use the vetting process get behind candidates and pick the right ones, and then get out there and get them elected versus the wait and see. I saw too many groups in the last election, and I think they learned their lesson. But I saw a lot of groups in the last election say, well, we're going to wait and see who wins the primary. Well, then you're going to be stuck with a rhino. That's the way it works.
We did it in the primary, and we're doing it. Matter of fact, I just got off the phone with George Lemieux and Adam Hazard's people and Haridopoulos. I don't need to do Mike McAllister. He's already been done. I know Mike real well. And with our local candidates. And then we didn't endorse. But I think what we're going to do now is we're going to support. But we're going to have a voter ID, and we will put the questions out there. And we give information to the candidates and let them know. Some of them didn't know.
Right.
So,
well, here's one thing that some of the groups did.
It's an education of both. Yes.
Here's some of the things that groups did, because, you know, if you are established as a charitable organization or some other, you can endorse in the primary.
Well,
what you can do is this. You can put out your preferred candidate. This is what a lot of the 912 groups did in Brevard and Volusia. They took a ballot. Of course, you really need to do this well in advance. 2 weeks before the election, it's not going to have the same impact. But put out a sample ballot or even just a list of your preferred candidates. That's basically endorsing without actually endorsing. And it does give people – because what happened is this. we see this happen all the time, election after election. People like, I'm tired of the mudslinging. I don't want to have, they don't want to pay attention to what's going on. But then 2 weeks before the election, I start getting phone calls. The local 912 groups start getting inundated
yes.
with phone calls.
Yes.
Who do I vote for? Who do I vote for? Well, if you had paid attention during the year, you would know. But so that they do rely on groups and known figures to try and recommend who to vote for. So
yes.
you can have an impact, and if you do it early on. So that's my only recommendation. Use this vetting process.
Can I give you an example of something that happened that really, this is really something?
Yeah.
And I like Senator Rubio. I'm not somebody who's against him. But we did try to vet him, and I talked to Marco probably a year and a half or 2 years before he even declared, okay?
Yeah.
So he wouldn't answer any of the questions. 18 times we tried. Now, what happened was this whole land grab thing that's going on in Miami, Harvey Rubin was appointed by Marco in 2008 to the Climate Advisory Task Force. So the subject came up again because of all this land grab, and he just won't answer the question. Why did he appoint him? Did he know about ICLEI? Did he know about a unit? He wouldn't answer the question, still will not answer the question. My senator, Joe Negron, came to speak in front of my group last week, who was very nervous, who told us that he, you know, once he was a Democrat, then he was a Republican, now he's a Libertarian, because everybody changes their stripes depending on who they're talking to, and told us that this Climate Advisory Task Force now has been eliminated. They have eliminated that particular chairmanship, whatever that means. And I find that odd now, considering that they're still fighting the land grab down there, and what happens to Harvey Rubin, he still is the county clerk, court of the clerk, or whatever he is, and still running the show, but he's this particularly Climate Advisory Task Force Commission is no task force is no longer in business. They did away with it in the last. So candidates have to be asked. They
yep.
have to be asked, and they have to be made to understand what this means.
Yep.
Our rights are being taken away. I'll tell you, every day I see it around me, and it's almost scary. Because you know what's coming, the bike paths, the, West Palm Beach just got electric, things to plug in their cars.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, well,
it's not about the, you know what it's about.
Right. Well, listen, Cindy, we appreciate you. Great call in. Thanks for calling
Thank
in. Call in
so
anytime.
Thank you so much. I'll pass the word around.
Absolutely. Again, thanks for calling in. We appreciate
Thanks.
That. And I would just say, just to cap off what Cindy, you know, said there was that I've been putting this out for years now, and that is we all pay attention to our federal elected officials because that's kind of what's mostly in the news. But the reality is this. Our local and state officials are screwing us on a daily basis if you don't pay attention. And we can hold them accountable. It's actually quite easier to hold them accountable, a lot easier to hold them accountable than it is our federal elected officials. And so we need to start paying attention to what's going on in our own local area, at the state, county, city levels, because things are happening like this that are going to affect us, that are going to hurt us on down the road, that we may think we've solved the problems at the federal level and the next thing turn around, and our local and county officials are doing the same stuff to us from a different angle, and now it's like, oh, geez, why do we let that happen? So in any case, that was a great question and some good information from Cindy. Sid, anything you want to dogpile on top of that?
Yeah, I would like to expand a little bit on this fishery issue that we have going on, Tom, and this will bring it home to people as to how Agenda 21 affects us locally. And with the issue with red snapper being, we're going into the second year of a complete total closure of all red snapper fishing in the southeast regions, that's North Carolina to Key West, Florida. That was based on a stock assessment produced by the National Marine Fisheries Service in 2008, known as CDAR 15. And the connection to Agenda 21 is found directly in a paper produced by a faculty scientist at the University of Florida, William Kinney, in his review of CDAR 15, which he pointed out that CDAR 15 is the use of the precautionary principle. Now, that's significant because the precautionary principle is item 15 of the Rio Declarations, which is part of Agenda 21. And that the precautionary principle has been incorporated into the federal fishery management regulations known as the Magnuson-Stevenson Act, which was reconfigured in 1996 through the Sustainable Fishing Act and through at least two other reauthorizations of the Magnuson Act, which today it reflects the mandates and policy recommendations in Agenda 21. So here we have a major fishery in the southeastern United States, which is completely closed down to access, recreational and commercial, despite an extreme abundance of these fish. It's closed to the public. And it's closed to the public because it can be traced directly back to Agenda 21. Mm-hmm. And also, that's facilitated through a very inefficient, inaccurate stock assessment program.
Yeah, amazing. Well, hey, Sid, we got a Diane on the phone, and it sounds like somebody that may know you, but she certainly knows of you, and she wants to let everybody know about the convention that's going on this weekend. Probably, it looks like probably in the Orlando area that folks can attend. She says there's still room available. Diane, how are you doing, and where are you calling from?
I'm doing fine, and I'm calling from Volusia County, Sid's stomping ground.
Ah. Okay.
Yeah.
Hi, Diane.
Hey,
well, tell us
Sid.
About the... Tell us about the convention this weekend or what's going on this weekend.
Well, we're having the first Florida Agenda 21 convention, and I just wanted to slip that in there for anybody that wants to have a chance to go. It's from 9 to 5 on Saturday, this coming weekend, and it's at 3615 Century Boulevard in Lakeland.
Okay.
And you can bring your lunch or you can buy your lunch when you get there.
Awesome. Now, is there a website that people can go to get more information about this?
Yeah, if you go to the agenda21today.com,
okay.
There's information on there for
okay.
It, yeah.
Do you know if there are other conventions like this going on around the state or around the country?
This is the first one in Florida. I know they're starting to. The country's waking up, and I think this is in Sid. I'd be curious if Sid agrees with me. I think this is one of the reasons why we see so many things pushing ahead so fast, and things seem to be moving and running across more stuff lately, is they know we're not stupid anymore. We've caught on, and they're in a race against the time against us and our knowledge.
Yeah, that's always how it works, isn't it? Wow.
Yep.
All right, Diane, well, thanks. And give us that website address one more time.
It's www.agenda21today.com.
Okay, agenda21today.com. Excellent. Diane, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Okay.
And Sid, give us your website and anywhere else that people ought to be going on the web to get more information about this.
Well, we've got a lot of information related to the fisheries at eastcoastfishingsection.com. And anything related to ICLEI and Agenda 21, there's some great websites out there such as freedom.org. It's Michael Shaw's website out of California. Sovereignty.net. You can do a Google search on Henry Lamb or Dr. Michael Kaufman. Those are the two preeminent researchers in the United States, and I attribute them to most of the knowledge that I have has come from Dr. Kaufman and Henry Lamb. So both of those gentlemen deserve a lot of credit for the in-depth research that they have done.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, you know, this reminds me a bit of the Czech president. He doesn't say it quite the same way anymore, but when he gave a speech a few years ago, he talked about how climate change is really the new communism, because if you can get the people to believe that we're in control of the climate, but it's disastrous, what's going on is disastrous, and we've got to make some changes. And of course, it's going to require sacrifice from everybody. It's going to require the government to control you. And in order to save the planet, that all of a sudden you've got the newest form of communism. This sounds like another form of that in another shielded way, and really coming from us at more of the local level. Would you agree with that?
I would certainly agree with that, Tom. And if you trace back to the roots of where all this comes from to the 1970s, to the report from the Brundtland Commission, that was chaired by Gro Harlem Brundtland, who was the president of the World Socialist Party.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at Freedom Advocates online here, and it says, if one is to look, this mission statement has been incorporated into many government and non-government organizations. Is it a surprise that it was also reflected in the old Soviet Constitution? Yeah. Now, it's not to say that anything that was in the old Soviet Constitution would necessarily be bad for us, but I really can't imagine anything's good for us, and probably not – going to be good for us in the long run. And it's just amazing how we just keep getting flanked left and right, Dick, by organizations and groups and people that want to turn us into some kind of socialistic organization, some kind of socialistic country. And it's not because they care about our well-being. That's the way they always portray it. It's all about power. What did Castro do in the revolution? Is he concerned about his people? It's about power. You know what? Everybody is the same there. Everybody has everything. Everybody shares in the wealth, and they're poor as can be. My local grocery store here, a lady there that's Cuban, she finally went back after, I think she said it's been like 40 years since she's been to Cuba, and she almost started to cry when she was talking to me at the checkout line at the grocery store. I felt bad for her, and she just shook her head and said, it's terrible there. There's hardly any food, and it's just so bad to see it in these conditions. And so that's what socialism, Marxism, communism, all those forms of socialism do for a country. They turn it into that. And last week, Paul and I reported on an article that said that the British healthcare system is on the brink of bankruptcy and it's unsustainable. So we've got all of our lefty liberals in this country that like to hold up the British healthcare system, like our director of Medicare now. I'll try and think of his name. I've seen him at many conferences in the past. The guy is a loser. I've seen him speak at many of these big healthcare conferences, and he never says anything. He's a good speaker, and if you weren't paying too close attention, you'd think, my gosh, this guy is good. But then he's saying nothing. There's absolutely no substance to this guy. And now he's running our Medicare system, and he's the one that went to Great Britain and said, this is wonderful. This is how we need to run things in the U.S. And it's unsustainable, and they're wringing their hands in Great Britain now trying to figure out what they're going to do next. We just have way too many losers in this government that this president has appointed that are sick people. Quite honestly, they're sick people, and we've got to get rid of them. Dick, what are your thoughts?
I've been sitting here thinking about what Mr. Obama has said during the election process and since he became president about the middle class cannot be the middle class. We have to reduce ourselves to living the way those on welfare. We have to give what we have to them and bring their standard of living up. If you look at the way this stuff is worded, it's all worded around Agenda 21. It's about making everybody the same class. And what Sid said about how much of our country they want to turn into now private land owned by the government that we can't even go on, that is their agenda. You do not have a right to own a home with your own land. You will live in a condominium, an apartment house, something that you will pay rent on to the government. Because for you to own land, for your neighbor to own land with a home on it, is a waste of our country's resources and our property.
Well, you know, Dick, we did a show last week where we talked about this, liberty and personal freedoms and personal liberty, and they are directly tied to property. In the 1800s, if you didn't have property, you could not be a free man. You were at the behest of another man or the government, and that is not what liberty is about. That's not what this country was founded on. And so Agenda 21 is a direct violation and in direct conflict with our Declaration of Independence, let alone our Constitution.
Uh-huh.
So anybody that wants to think property rights aren't of any value, that was what liberty was based on, having property and the freedom to utilize that property and the freedom to make your own choices. This, I mean, not being able to own property, but the government knows how to own property better than us. I want somebody to please call me and tell me what the government has done lately that is better than the private sector. And I know there are the folks out there that like to call in and say, big corporations are destroying us. Well, Dick, you and I had this conversation. These big corporations making all this money, they are public and they have stock. And who's buying that stock and investing it so that they can establish a retirement for themselves? You, me, and everybody on my block. If they have any kind of 401k retirement, they have funds that are invested in some of these big companies, whether it be my company, American Airlines, big oil companies. But we've got the liberals that want us to believe that the big bad companies are just that, big and bad, and they're screwing us and destroying this nation. I had somebody say this to me the other day. These big companies are destroying the nation. And I said, these big companies built the nation. Who do you think is destroying the nation between the big companies that built it or the government that's actually the one that's destroying it? The government did not create this great country. The government did not. And as Ronald Reagan said, government's not the solution, it's the problem. And we're seeing that on a daily basis, just growing and growing from the local level right on up to the highest level. And this is Agenda 21 is something that people really need to be aware of.
Tom, my wife, Ann, is on the phone. She'd like to say something.
Yes, Ann, go right ahead, please.
Yeah. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to make a plug for a book that I got from Sid, The Creature from Jekyll Island.
Yes.
Now, this is all about, it's a second look at the Federal Reserve. And what really jumped out at me toward the end of the book is the, this is basically the bankers back in 1910 to try to figure out how to keep their business alive and their pockets full. And what would they need to do to keep their business going? And what they came up with was a global government, the New World Order, which is the implementation of this New World Order and the global government is Agenda 21. I would like to point that out. The IMF World Bank was central for this idea to go through. The Council on Foreign Relations, which Hillary Clinton, the Clintons are a big part of, is all part of this. They had two arms for this, the military control and financial control. And this is what they're doing to us. If anybody wants to read that book, they'll get a big eye-opener. They went from war to the environmental pollution model to control the people of the world. What we have to do is go back to the gold standard and the silver standard for our money. And there's several steps to, you can't just abolish the Fed. You have to do it step by step. That single thing, going back to a monetary standard that's backed by gold and silver and getting rid of the Fed would topple a lot of this Agenda 21. But nobody is talking about that. I would suggest people read that book. That's where it started.
Yeah.
Agenda 21 is the implementation.
Well, I've got a question for Sid. Sid, do you think if we open the Federal Reserve right now to look in and just see what's actually there, there would actually be any money there, any real cash whatsoever?
That's an excellent question, Tom. I'd love to see that done. How about you?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything there. I think it's a huge scam. I think every time they write checks to buy treasury notes or for anything, when that gets paid back to them, it just goes in their pocket. You know, everybody knows that these are owned by large, wealthy families in the world, and they may have started out at one time by bankrolling the U.S. and being the backer of our debt and our currency, yet I think now they just pocket it because in the digital age, all they have to do is go to any bank, add some zeros. It's fake money they've added. It's a house of cards. It's an absolute house of cards about to fall in.
You know that when we went to paper currency, that the United States dollar was backed by gold or silver. And over the years, that has been removed. Right now, there is absolutely nothing backing the United States dollar other than the fact that if I buy a loaf of bread from you and you give you $2, you'll accept it. It's just faith.
Yeah,
a lot of countries around the world are losing the faith in the dollar right now. So I've read some interesting articles about whether or not that gold was transferred out of there or not. I don't know if it is or not, but the Federal Reserve System, there's a lot of facts about that. That book that Ann mentioned, The Creature from Jekyll Island, should be required reading for every adult in this country.
Yeah, yep.
Because once you understand the money system...
Tom, I think you and Sid will both agree with me. What we have with this banking system we've got is nothing more than a huge Ponzi scheme. They're playing games with numbers, bouncing one book to another. All it is a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, there's no...
It's bigger than the 800-pound gorilla in the living room. It's a gargantuan problem that we have on our hands, and it's going to have to be reconciled some way. And I think those days are not too far in front of us, the way things are going right now. And, Dick, you mentioned something a few minutes ago about the lockup of the lands and everything. And we should mention that a lot of that is what is called smart growth. And that's it's another one of these terms that gets thrown out there, like sustainability, smart growth. It sounds good. You know, smart growth sounds intelligent, right? Let's do something smart. Smart growth really is the implementation of Agenda 21 and sustainable development. And it's done at the local level. You know, Volusia County has a smart growth committee. And the buying up of the lands in the middle part of the county is all part of implementing the Wildlands Project that is in the conventional biological diversity. So it's all of this is interconnected. All of our restrictions and prohibitions on accessing our natural resources, whether it's fishing, petroleum, timber, even farming. You know, everything is being that made this country great is being placed off limits to us.
Yeah. Well, Sid, we got another caller. Pat was listening in earlier. She decided she wanted to ask a question, and I'll let her ask the question. It's not something that I recognize, but you may know, and if not, we'll let her explain what she's trying to connect to Agenda 21. And she wanted to ask if there is a connection to Agenda 21, so just bring her on. Pat, how are you doing today, and where are you calling from?
Great. I'm calling from Venice, Florida. And,
okay.
Sid, I wanted to know if you have a connection to connect the dots between the EPA program for the brownfield grants and Agenda 21 locally.
The brownfield grants are, explain that a little bit. I think I know what you're talking about.
Right. That's where they give grants to cities, and they're giving millions right now. I get their notices every day. Today it says $4.3 million to Montana communities. What they do is they give the cities money to buy up properties that are polluted, and then they pay to have them fixed up. And I believe what they do is they require that those properties are then turned into large complexes for people
to
live.
Pat, I can tell you without a doubt that there is a direct connection there to Agenda 21 and smart growth. They come in and they can designate certain sections of a town or city as blighted. It may not be, just maybe a few businesses closed. But once it receives the designation of a blighted area, then it qualifies for these grants that come from various agencies of the federal government. And the grant process is an integral part of implementing these policies. And I'll give you an example. In Volusia County, the Department of Energy gave the county government last year a grant of $2.5 million to produce the Volusia County Climate Protection Plan, which is in process right now, and that is part of the process of implementing the Kyoto protocols at the local levels. And it's all done through the grant-making process, this money that's coming out of these federal agencies with virtually no congressional oversight whatsoever. It's a sad state of affairs that the United States Congress has become almost completely irrelevant in this process. There's virtually no oversight to this vast amount of money that the federal agencies are transferring down to the local levels to implement these policies.
And that, Sid, is really the linchpin here that is driving this country over a cliff. Our federal government has gotten so big that our legislators can't even keep up with it. Even if they wanted to, they can't keep up with it. You've got agency after agency after agency doing underhanded things that, you know, quite honestly, our legislators have to appropriate the money. But once it's appropriated, is it being used for that, and are they being truthful about how they want to use that money? You know, there's just so much legislation, and that for our legislators to look through all that, this is why we've got to scale back the size of the federal government. We've just got to get out from under this massive octopus with 20 arms reaching all over the place and dipping into things. And you're right, without congressional oversight, and I think this is exactly what must be stopped, is this lack of congressional oversight. And the only way to ever stop it is to reduce the size of government. I've read this before many times, but I'm going to do it again because I think it's appropriate for right now, and that is, during Thomas Jefferson's administration, he made it clear to his Secretary of the Treasury he wanted to pay off the debt. They were going to do it in 16 years, and they really did it in about 8 years or less. and they wanted to pay off the national debt and keep our costs low, the government's costs low. Well, as they neared the end of Jefferson's administration, it was looking like we might have to go to war with England because of their impressment of our sailors and their blockading of our ports, et cetera. I mean, they were letting us do some shipping, but that really was the lifeblood of our economy. And so as it looked closer and closer, and we're trying to decide what to do, the Secretary of the Treasury said at that point he'd rather than spend money on building up a military because he didn't want to do it. He feared less getting into a war than he did the corruption that would spring out of a larger government. So he didn't want to pour more money not only into the military but into the government to manage this. And he said, and he made it very clear, it's not about increasing our debt. It's not about the danger of foreign powers. It's about the corruption we'll see grow out of a larger government. So even back in, you know, this would have been probably around 1807 or 8, even back then they recognized the danger of a larger government. And how big was their government back then? It wasn't very big at all, nothing compared to today. And so even with a small government, they recognized the kind of corruption that will come out of it, and that's precisely what this Agenda 21 is all about, the corruption of our government and what it's doing to corrupt our state and local governments.
I've reached a little mental block here. Maybe one of you two can help me out. What is the law that gives the government authority to take land for a school, a road, a police station, a city hall, or whatever?
That's eminent domain, Dick.
Eminent domain, okay.
Yeah.
A good example that just happened in Florida, and it shows that our courts are going along with this.
Yeah.
Florida took a certain community in Florida took some land under eminent domain, privately owned land, had homes on it, because they wanted an apartment house built there. Some big company wanted to come in and develop this apartment house, and that would give that community more tax dollars. Therefore, it fit into the eminent domain, and they were able to take this land away from the owners.
Yeah.
Well,
that is not what
eminent
domain was set up to be.
No, but the precedent was set, I believe it was up in New Hampshire a few years ago with what was known as the Kello decision, where they took some land up there for a similar use, and it went to the Supreme Court, and they ruled that it was not in violation of the Constitution, just as the Indiana Supreme Court just ruled that the law enforcement agencies coming into your house, you don't have the right to defend yourself or your home, despite the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution.
Right. Well, you know, the left is always hailing these activist judicial rulings as smart judicial rulings when they go outside of the Constitution, because that's what they want to see. They want to see judges rule outside of the Constitution. Then when you have a good conservative judge that believes in the Constitution rule within the Constitution, he's called an activist. It's unbelievable the way they twist things. Well, gentlemen, we're getting close on time here. I wanted to wrap up the show with one last thing. I finally found the name of this gentleman that I was referring to, this Obama appointee. And I'm just going to read this very quickly. Don Berwick is his name, and here's what he said when he spoke in 2008 to British physicians. He said, I hate to read this because it just it's like listening to I'm glad I don't have to hear him say it, but anyway, I am romantic about National Health Service. He's talking about their National Health Service in Great Britain. I'm romantic about National Health Service. I love it because it is generous, hopeful, confident, joyous, and just. The National Health Service decides which care can be too costly for the government to pay. It's a real-time decider of life and death outcomes. Last week, Paul and I reported that 90% of the folks in Great Britain are receiving the health care they need. After seeing a primary care physician, they need to see a specialist. The waiting time is only 4.5 weeks for 90% of the population. In Scotland, it's down to something like 50%. And so they're trying to fix those problems. We have no such problems here in the U.S. And yet our director of Medicare is in love with the crappy British system. And just to wrap this up, it says it acts as a comparative effectiveness tool. And this is a hot topic. I get emails all the time because of the consulting I used to do. I still get all kinds of emails and stuff in the mail. Comparative effectiveness. In other words, some board looking at, well, what seems to work the best? And if it works good for 80% of the people, then the 20% that might need something else, well, you know, we can save money by just not giving it to them. And that's what they already do in Canada and all throughout Europe. But He said, this article says, it acts as a comparative effectiveness tool for the National Health Service, okay, that's in Great Britain, comparing various treatments and determining whether the benefits the patients receive, such as, here's one example, prolonged life, are cost-effective for the government. See, this is what happens with socialized medicine. What's best for the government? Not for you, the patient. What's best for the government? Now, they'll say, well, it's really what's best for the people. No, it's what's best for the government. And that's why all this rationing is going on. And Don Berwick, you're not romantic about the National Health Service. You're a moron about the National Health Service in Great Britain. So with that said, I'm going to thank you guys one more time for coming on, Sid Prescott and Dick Bierenbach. Paula, did you have anything you wanted to say to these two fine gentlemen before we leave?
I want to finish up with, Tom.
Go ahead.
We got about 2 minutes.
We've picked on an awful lot of politicians in the past hour. It's time people hear about a good one that I found out. I keep looking at who's doing what in Florida. Congressman Alan West, 22nd District of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Here is a man that has it put together. He knows what's going on. He doesn't like what he sees. He has a fantastic website. I don't have it. I'm sure if you just put in Congressman Alan West, it'll come up.
Right.
People like him, because he knows what's going on, he wants to do something, he needs support from all the people in the state and the country.
Right. Yeah, a lot of people in South Florida know who he is, but in the rest of the country, they don't. So that's a good one. Appreciate that, Dick. But we're going to give the final word now to Paula. Paula, before we give you the final word, you will have the final word. But Sid, one last time, where can people find out more about Agenda 21?
I would say freedomadvocates.org, sovereignty.net, Google Henry Lamb, or Dr. Michael Kaufman.
Okay, excellent. All right, Paula.
Thanks for having me, Tom. I appreciate
it. Thanks, Sid. Appreciate
it. Anybody listening that's learned something today, get active.
Awesome. It was good. We had a lot of people listening today. Appreciate that. Paula, what are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts are not what you think it's going to be. I just learned in the chat room that Anthony Weiner admits sending explicit photos says that he had multiple online relationships.
I saw this morning that Wienergate had gotten bigger, so to speak, and apparently it's about to explode. So I think he's out of a job, quite honestly, hopefully, and he was going to run for mayor of New York. Good. We don't need Wiener in the office in New York. So,
can I answer your question for you?
Yes, you may.
You're going to be the host, not me. I just opened up my email and I seen that.
All right. So, Paula, this thing, you know, what I saw this morning was that more and more is coming about his online stuff, and now he's admitting that he's had online affairs. Wow. But, you know, the Democrats will just look at it and go, it's a big deal. What's a big deal? Now, if it were a Republican, you know why it's not a big deal with Democrats? Because Democrats don't run on family values or any values of any kind. Democrats only run on what feels good to you at this moment, and we're going to push for it. We don't care about the damage left in the wake. All we care about is living for today, for tomorrow never comes. That's the liberal mantra. So that's why somebody like Anthony Weiner is going to get away with this. If he does, hopefully he won't. I think the majority of Americans will go, you know what, this guy's a creep, and let's get rid of him. So that's my hope. But
on the rip.
Yeah. Well, thank you for bringing that up, Paul. All right. Tomorrow we're not broadcasting. I'm going to reiterate, Michael Cutler is going to be taking over on Fridays at 7 p.m. Don't miss his show. He's a nationally renowned, known a guy for used to have a radio show, and he's always on somebody's radio show or TV show, and he was actually even offered a gig on MSNBC, believe that or not, on a daily basis to be on one of their panels, but he turned that down, and thank goodness, because I can't even turn on MSNBC anymore. It's nothing but lies coming out of those folks, but he'll be broadcasting then. We'll be back on Wednesday. We don't have a guest now. I'm working on trying to get Hiram Mann, one of the last remaining Tuskegee Airmen fighter pilots left, and we'll see if we can get him on for next Monday, and if we can, that'll be a fantastic show. Otherwise, I'll see you again on Wednesday, Paula.
All right. Have a great one.
All right. You too. Thanks for being here today.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.